Well, I'm going to be doing a section of James today, following in, with the study that the pastor's already started. And I was looking this over, and I've got a couple of sections of James that I'll be doing. And one is today's, with two wealths, and later it'll be two wisdoms. So I was kind of wondering, is that random, or is it like that many is as far as he trusted me to count? I wasn't really sure. And when you have little boys around the house, you start to relate to numbers by how many fingers you hold up, But today we're going to be in James chapter 1 again. And my section is verses 9 through 11. Let the brother of low degree rejoice in that he is exalted, but the rich in that he is made low, because as a flower of the grass he shall pass away. For the sun is no sooner risen with a burning heat, but it withereth the grass, and the flower thereof falleth, and the grace of the fashion of it perishes. So also shall the rich man fade away in his ways. Now, some of the background from this, the pastor's already covered. We have James being the author, of course, the half-brother of Jesus. He's writing to Jewish Christians scattered among the foreign nations. James is writing that the trials would come into their lives, but there could be joy and purpose could come from those trials. And from those trials, the readers could become spiritually mature. And finally, see how much faster I am than he is? I mean, I covered like three sermons right there. Through our trials, we are to seek God's wisdom because he bestows it generously and gently so that we will apply the wisdom. And that's the key of it, is to apply the wisdom in his faithful action. So, what aspects of life cause trials? Trials that you need godly wisdom. Trials that cause wavering and indecisiveness. From our text today, we see that James is going to address an area that brings trials. Trials that require godly wisdom. And what is that area? It's wealth. So he's already built us up. And now he throws out one of the big no-no conversations among Christians. Going to talk about money. How dare he? But from these verses, James is telling Christians not to take pride in their exalted earthly status, but in their humble spiritual status in Christ. James wants Christians to realize their dependence on Christ and their equality before God, whether they are rich or poor. They have equality one with the other. And with this, our status before God and our status of equality with believers should lead us to use our wealth in a godly way. So starting off at verse 9, we're going to go from low to high. Let the brother of low degree rejoice in that he is exalted. When testing comes to the poor man, he can rejoice that he possesses spiritual riches that can't be taken away. For this audience, that's critical. Because remember, some of these may have been removed from Israel hundreds of years earlier, but some may have just were fleeing from Saul as he was taking prisoners. And I'm pretty sure that when they had to flee, they had to do it quick. They couldn't go to the bank, empty out their accounts and rent a U-Haul, and then run. They had to leave now. And that would explain why some may have been rich, but no longer were. So as we look at this, it's interesting to see this brother of low degree. This comes from a Greek word, tapinos. It's a meaning of not rising far from the ground. And sometimes when you see words expressed like that, it kind of gives you this visualization of what's happening. Not low or not rising far from the ground. So to visualize this, think in terms of Luke chapter 16, which is the rich man and Lazarus. And the rich man, he was exalted. He was exalted in his position, exalted in his living in a mansion, exalted by eating fine foods, wearing nice and expensive clothing, and he was surrounded by the wealthy and powerful. That was his exalted living. And outside his front door was Lazarus, who, not rising far from the ground, literally, laid out there every day, or more likely, thrown out there, waiting for an opportunity to eat a scrap from the table of the rich. And his companions were dogs. But low degree has a greater meaning than worthlessness. Matthew chapter 11, verse 29. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest for your souls. Lowly in this verse, as Jesus describes himself, is the same exact Greek word, tapinos. Jesus identified himself as having a humble heart. And it is through our union with Christ and his meek and humble nature that we can find rest for our souls. It is not the self-exaltation of riches that will lift us from the ground. It is through the exalted position of the humble Christ that provides our true exaltation. In verse 10, we have the high going low. But the rich, in that he is made low, because as a flower of the grass, he shall pass away. When testing comes to the rich, they can rejoice when they're saved, in that they possess spiritual riches that can't fade or wither. So which trial is more difficult? The trial of riches? The trials of poverty? I can see it on your faces. Give me a chance to try the riches trials, right? That's what I want. But as we go through this, and we delve deeper into James over the next few months, literally months, we move at the lightning speed of a three-legged sloth. Late summer, we'll be there. And we will see that James has a lot more to say in correcting the rich than he has to say to the poor. Interesting, isn't it? Let the rich boast in humiliation. James has a strange way to perceive life. A poor man can be exalted and a rich man can be humbled. What a strange way. It doesn't sound like our way, does it? But expanding that thought further, the rich man has something that he can rejoice in, to be proud of. And that is that he can be humbled before God by the work of Jesus Christ and the power of the Holy Spirit. The humbling is not to be considered embarrassing. It is a purposeful action. James, right? Always talking about action. Always talking about the way that you apply the wisdom of God. Of voluntarily making oneself low to the ground. It's being brought low and being humble before the cross of Christ and saying, Jesus is preferred before me. I'm not even able to loosen his sandals. I am nothing. Jesus is everything. The rich are to realize that wealth brings them no greater value in the eyes of God. Therefore, they don't boast in their wealth. They boast in their humble status as a servant of God. In verse 11, coming from a different version than you have probably in front of you, "For the sun rises with its scorching heat and withers the grass. Its flower falls, its beauty perishes. So also will the rich man fade away in the midst of his pursuits." So James here is using imagery that's common in the Middle East. And that morning sun rises, and it will display a colorful desert flowers all over the landscape. But as soon as that morning sun turns into a hot noonday sun, the beauty of all those flowers will fade, and the flower will fall off, and they'll wither and die under the heat of that sun. And notice here, as James is talking about the transitory life of both of the rich, it goes on to say that it's not the wealth that disappears, it's the man himself. The verse says that it is the rich man that will fade away, and it will occur in the middle of his pursuits. While he's planning, plotting, how can I get more? What means can I use to have greater wealth? It's in that moment that he fades away. Now we're sounding a little bit like Solomon in Ecclesiastes here, because we're seeing here, as Solomon wrote, life is uncertain. Turn the clock back a little over a year ago. Who saw COVID coming? I didn't. Maybe Fauci. But everyone else. It was unknown. And we didn't expect to see so many sicknesses and deaths. How many more are coming from another illness? And when will it strike? I have no idea. Life is uncertain. Disaster is possible at any moment. Death comes to all, including the rich. Jesus spoke on this same topic of a rich man and his plans in Luke chapter 12, the parable of the rich fool. The man who was pursuing the building of new barns to store his wealth. He had so much wealth he couldn't even hold it in the old system. He had to build a newer system that was bigger and better. And once he got to that point in his plans, he was going to take it easy. He was going to eat, he was going to drink, and he's going to be merry. He had his life all plotted out for him. One thing went wrong. God was overseeing all of that, and he says, "Nope, that's not going to happen, because your soul is required of you tonight." He didn't have that in his plans. When Jesus closed out that parable in Luke chapter 12, he said, "So is he that lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." James wants his readers to see that too. He wants them to understand that riches will benefit you to a certain degree, but then that's it. They're not going to take you any further than this world. Lay up treasures toward God and not toward this world. Now, the text verses here in James provide a life lesson. It's not the having, and it's not the lacking of earthly resources that gets you through the trials of life. It is your spiritual resources that provide the value. James is writing a book that we will apply godly wisdom in faithful action. And we do that by following a Christ-like pattern in the way that we treat the less fortunate and thinking about the role that money plays in how we live our life. We hear about the mistreatment of Lazarus by the rich man, who's often called Dives, which is the Latin word for rich. And we look at Dives and we say that he deserves to be in hell. We're appalled by him. He wouldn't even provide table scraps for a starving man outside his door. What a despicable person. Hell's the only place he should be in. And why we condemn Dives at the same time, we live like the rich fool, planning your next project, many of which will never see completion. We can see the ills of other rich people and not recognize the ills in our own life that encumber those in need. We have to be careful not to accept the standards of the world in the use of wealth. And I'm going to take that a little bit further. This is where it's really going to make somebody angry, I suppose. Not just the world, but the American standard. The American standard is materialism. We don't need that in our lives, and we don't need it to creep into our churches, and specifically into this church, and our church function, and the way that we perceive the needs of others. That is not the standard to hold. The standard and the principles that we need to follow are biblical principles. The biblical principles of using godly wealth. What are some of those areas that God expects us to use our wealth toward? To the weak, the orphan, the widow, the naked, the hungry. It's all paraphrasing, folks. I ain't making this stuff up. Get your concordance out. Look these words up. You're going to find Jesus or Paul or somebody talking about each one of these. Remember the words of Christ. It is more blessed to give than receive. To give generously. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 17 through 19. As for the rich in this present age, charge them not to be haughty, nor to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. They are to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, thus storing up treasure for themselves as a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is truly life. James and Paul have same concepts that Christ had. Each of these men writing these letters are saying, let our guide in the use of money for each person here and for the use of our church funds follow the biblical pattern. I know that's a little tough. It's hard to reach down, pull your wallet out of your pocket, and provide for someone else that has a greater need. Because you know as soon as you spend those few dollars, you're thinking, I could have had for myself if I didn't give that away. But as James says here, it's all transitory anyhow. So whatever you had planned to do with those dollars in your pocket, there's a good chance you would have never fulfilled that purpose. Paul says, store up treasures as a good foundation for the future, so they may take hold of that which is truly life. Life is not in the Dow Jones. It's not at the banks. It's in Jesus Christ. And as James describes it here, he wants his readers to understand their exaltation comes from Christ.